Welcome to Beyond the Bedside, the podcast for physicians considering non-clinical careers. This podcast provides information regarding non-clinical careers both within and outside the healthcare industry. There are a few things I would like to share with you before we begin the show. I'm announcing a change in the show format today for Beyond the Bedside. I have been trying to produce the show on a weekly basis, but have decided at this point in time that I'm going to change the schedule of the releases of the show. I will now be releasing the show on a monthly rather than a weekly basis. This will allow me time to do more research and to provide you with better tools on the website and focus on providing and bringing you more value on the website and with each episode of Beyond the Bedside. I hope that many of you will be interested in exploring the possibilities of transitioning to non-traditional or non-clinical roles. I have been expanding the amount of information on my website to include links to master's programs, organizations, other authors, and experts that can help you, number one, decide whether a transition to a non-clinical role is right for you, or number two, provide you with access to information that will help you make this transition if you have already decided to begin the transition into a non-clinical career. Please take the time to visit my website, beyondthebedside.net. You can contact me through the website and have access to this great information. Welcome to episode 4 of Beyond the Bedside. Today we have the second installment of my interview with Dr. Douglas Apple. I'm excited to be able to bring the second portion of this interview to you. There was so much great content that we covered during the interview, I realized that it would be best to divide the interview into two separate installments. The information in this installment will be very valuable to each of you. My guest today has a tremendous amount of leadership experience. He practiced as a hospitalist for many years at Spectrum Health in Grand Rapids, eventually assuming a leadership role with the Spectrum Health Hospitalist Group. He also served in leadership roles on the medical staff during his tenure at Spectrum Health. He advanced to become the chief medical officer for the Spectrum Health Medical Group, leading over 1,000 physicians and advanced practice professionals, and then moved into the role of chief medical officer for the entire Spectrum Health delivery system, both the hospital group and the medical group. During his tenure at Spectrum Health, there were many changes that he was instrumental in helping the organization achieve. He established the Preoperative Assessment Center for Spectrum Health. He also worked to define and optimize the manner in which advanced practice professionals, both PAs and nurse practitioners, would be successfully integrated into the hospital group and medical group practices. It's my great pleasure to have such an experienced and knowledgeable physician leader share his insights about leadership with you on this program. Let's get into the second installment of the interview with Dr. Douglas Apple.
Currently, as a little bit of an update, I'm also currently in the Michigan State Master's of Science program for healthcare management. And the reason I did that was twofold. One of which is I really do want to learn some of the basic knowledge that I never really got on the front end. And secondly, I absolutely love the aspect of being able to learn from the cohort, you know, to intergage with other individuals from different perspectives, maybe even different fields, to be able to apply it then, you know, to my experiences, not only now, but going forward for what I have to try to obtain as far as, you know, change in organizations or even in just healthcare in general.
So the decision to pursue an advanced degree, a non-medical advanced degree, is always, it's a question, again, that I get from many younger physicians as they try to decide whether to pursue a non-clinical career. But you advanced quite far in your non-clinical roles without having any kind of an advanced master's degree in business administration or public health. and yet now you're pursuing that degree. Do you wish that that's something that you had pursued earlier in your career?
I'm going to say no, and that's because the fact that I have been able to take a lot of experiences and learn from them, not suggesting that most of them were successes, but being able to learn from those experiences is really vital. And now I'm able to take just many years of physician leadership experiences and apply it to what I'm learning now in school. It just so happens that our very first class is about critical thinking. And right now, with all of the experiences that I've been able to firsthand witness, as well as just my own mistakes, but also what I got to experience through observations of others, I'm able to apply into this program, and it's going to help me excel. I can't tell you necessarily all the specifics as to why or how I got to the level of leadership I did without formal business or healthcare administration training. But I will tell you that it was multifaceted. As I mentioned, it was learning from others. It was being very observant. Humility was extremely important, not only in how you treat others, but also understanding what you do or don't know about a certain given topic. And, you know, being able to always ask questions and willing to learn absolutely helped me to grow and apply those skill sets, you know, as I've gone forward. So it's been very important for me not to lose sight of a training program I might have done 10 years ago. Doesn't necessarily mean it's all still relevant and it might have advanced, but it's very important to make sure that what you learned, you continue to apply and realize when maybe you need to learn something different and not just rely on those old patterns or old traits of how you got something done before. So critical thinking is absolutely something that you have to learn to apply. And I'm very fortunate to be having that experience right now in the master's program.
Yeah, I think that's a great skill to be reinforced, especially as you start this formal program. I think there are many different ways for physicians to become effective leaders. And you alluded to your path, which was that you, first of all, you had a huge interest in making things better. But I liked what you said about using your experience, being mentored, being humble, and learning as much as you possibly could from other role models in your organization. I think that all of those experiences, whether you pursue a formal degree, which many people do at a relatively young age, I've known some physicians who come right out of their residency and do a master's. My personal preference is that the value of those types of degrees increase the more experience you bring to them. And I think that's what you were also referencing.
Yes, that's correct. And it's not to say that those that have done it earlier in their career are making a mistake. By no means am I making that suggestion. You know, for me, I went into the healthcare and specifically to be a physician. And it was through those experiences that helped me to figure out that I had interest in solving problems that were beyond just the patient that was in front of me. It was, how do we make sure we get to more patients timely, effectively? How do we coordinate with nurses? How do we coordinate with our own colleagues? How do we make systems better? And so for me, those years of experiences have now offered me the opportunity to really put some foundational structure in a master's program around that work. And I believe 100% that it was good to do it at this time. I also believe that it's really going to help me going forward into what you know, I need to be prepared to handle.
So maybe we can talk a little bit about your recent transition. I introduced you at the beginning of the program as the former chief medical officer for Spectrum Health in Grand Rapids. And I know that from our conversations that you made a decision to leave that role without having accepted another position. That had to have been a difficult decision or an interesting decision. Maybe you can tell us a little bit about how long it took you to decide that that was the best move for you.
Yeah, so to give you a little bit of backdrop to this, I have to go back to very late 2017. And at that time, I had been reflecting on my years of experience at Spectrum Health. And when I say years, at the time, it was 14 years plus. The reason why I say plus is because I had done my 3 years of residency, and I also worked there as an orderly in the emergency room before I went to medical school. So, you know, as an attending, I was there for 14 years. And having seen the system grow, as well as myself, not just in experiences, but also in all the title changes that came with it, my wife and I had a lot of reflection on, is this the place that I want to reside in, you know, through the end of my career? And at the time, I was 48 years old. Well, it was only a few weeks later that the CEO of 18 years announced his plans to retire. And by no means was I going after, the opportunity of being his successor. But I really then slowed down at the aspect of, you know, leave or stay. And I did that because I needed to really understand what was I going to then look for if I was to leave, but also what am I going to be looking for to stay when there is a new leader in that position. If you go into the summer of 2018 and then ultimately into the fall of 2018, as a new CEO is announced and has taken that position, you know, it's not uncommon in whether it's corporate America or even just in healthcare industry, where when the most senior positions change as far as individuals, or even sometimes in structure or both, that there is some turnover. And that was the case here at Spectrum, is that there was several who were part of that more senior, and I say senior as in chronological age, years of experience and wisdom. There was several of them that decided to retire around the same time as when the past CEO retired. So in addition to that, there was clearly a direction that the organization wanted to go. And, you know, with that being said, this was a great opportunity for me to consider other opportunities. And working with the senior leadership team, ultimately, we created an agreement for me to be able to leave Spectrum, which I did in late September of 2018. At that time, as you said, you know, not having another position lined up, fortunately, I had a lot of friends and colleagues that were very supportive and helpful. I've actually been in the interview process looking at another role and opportunity. But at the same time, starting this master's program, it's allowed me to be able to spend some time just learning about the administrative side in a different way than I had experienced it. And so, you know, with that being said, while it feels like you need to have that plan, we'll go back to the conversation you and I had earlier. I didn't have a plan of this is where I'm going next. But nonetheless, it's actually been one that has helped me to look and really consider what is it that I want in the next role, and making sure that I belong to that organization and they want me to be there. So it's more than just a fit, it's a belonging. And I've met a lot of great individuals so far in this process, and I'm really excited about some of the opportunities that are likely to actually come to fruition here in the next several weeks to a couple months.
So what do you think is most important as you look for the role? Is it, and you mentioned fit, You mentioned the roles as well. If you had to prioritize what you feel would be the most important things to consider between, let's say, the person who's leading the organization, the culture of the organization, the responsibilities of the position or the title, what are you finding you're spending most of your time assessing as you look at new opportunities?
That's a wonderful question. I'll tell you that there's probably, if you will, two categories or fundamental purposes that I focus on. I should say principles, two fundamental principles. First one is purpose. I want to really make sure, you know, that whatever is listed on somebody's vision and mission statement, there is a clear purpose for the individuals who get up in the morning to say, this is what I want to carry out today. And it fits with their mission and vision statement. Those statements are really important, and they were written for a reason, but they really set the tone for where the organization really needs to go. And with that, then, secondly, I want to make sure that part of the leadership team that I'm going to work with really believes in being able to support each other and being successful, but also when there are failures, and having the right mindset and culture to be able to help each other so that we continue to learn and grow. I think those are two fundamental areas that are really important. So one is the organizational perspective. The other one is a little bit more personal, because it's needing to be in an organization that actually not only feels good in supporting each other, but also has a purpose in fulfilling what your role is to do in that community. And so those are the two principal areas that I've really spent a lot of time focusing on. And I will tell you, having been on a few interviews so far, I've been able to, at least from my perspective, discern whether or not an organization has those in place or not. And there are a few that are doing it really well and are going to be extremely successful because they're matching, you know, the notion of margin and mission, as opposed to just being in it from the business aspect of make money. And that has been something that I've really appreciated in these conversations of, you know, not only the interviews, but just meeting these folks.
I was going to ask you how you were at Spectrum for, as you said, you were at Spectrum for 14 years. If you take away the time that you went away to medical school, you really spent the majority of your years post high school there. And what was it? What did it feel like to be leaving an organization that you've invested so much of yourself?
Well, you know, it's interesting because at the same time of being a little bit nervous, it's actually also exciting. You know, the reality is, you know, 14 years plus at the time when I left, it was 15 years plus. That's a lot of time to commit. And, you know, there's a lot of people that you really not only respect, but, you know, quite a few that you've come to admire for what they do, both in not only as, you know, clinicians, but also just who they are and how they act and behave. And that's really a challenge when you leave an organization, because, you know, some of those relationships aren't going to be ones that you necessarily are able to keep long term, or you have to do it in a way that is, you know, maybe, you know, remotely. But it's also good because when you think about what you've gained in knowledge and experience, you're also able to think about what other opportunities you're going to get in another organization and with another group of folks. And, you know, focusing on where you're at and what you need to do today to be able to get through, you know, tomorrow's adventures is one that, you know, for me has been very fulfilling, even though there's always this need of, boy, at some point I got to get a job. The reality is, you know, it's exciting to think about what's coming.
So what role, I'm trying to think how I can ask this question. For Doug Apple, when it comes right down to it, where the rubber meets the road, what does the role that you're going to move into have to allow you to accomplish? What's most important at this point in your career for you to accomplish in healthcare? How do you want to make a difference?
I think there's two components with this as well, one of which is I really do want to make sure that we advance physician leadership. And when I say physician leadership, I do want to pause and start changing that verbiage to provider leadership. I think it's really important to make sure that we have both MDs, DOs, other doctorate skilled individuals, and even advanced practice professionals who learn how to be better leaders in their space and can partner with not only each other, but also with our non-clinical leaders to be able to make sure that we're advancing our healthcare system. You know, it's really important for me to do that because I really want to do the second part of this, which is making sure that we're serving communities in a much different way than we have historically have done. It's not that I believe hospitals are going away, but what I do believe strongly, and I don't think really can be challenged all that much, is that the way in which we provide healthcare and wellness has to change. And so for me, an organization that is very hospital-centric is one that I'm not necessarily drawn to unless they really want to disrupt themselves and figure out ways in which they can be part of the community different than they have historically have been. So if you were to say what kind of title, well, Chief Medical Officer is one that I enjoy, but I would say a subcategory of that is one that is in a transformative role as opposed to the traditional role. There are now more commonly titles that talk about Chief Wellness or Chief Clinical Officer. Those are roles that are not necessarily as abundant as we have in Chief Medical Officer titles, but nonetheless, there are some organizations that are really getting creative at taking a CMO type duty skill set and combining it with Chief Operating Officer or Chief Quality Officer. And I think those are really areas in which, as a physician, with the degree of empathy that led us into this profession to begin with, I think we're in a wonderful position to be able to lead and make some significant changes.
You mentioned disruption, and I think the disruption in healthcare is fascinating. And there seems to be some areas or some segments of our economy that are really focused on healthcare and attempting to disrupt it. Have you thought about positions outside of what we might consider to be traditional healthcare? And you thought about working with some of the organizations that really seem to be focusing on changing the healthcare landscape?
Yes, absolutely. In fact, when the decision was to leave Spectrum, I really had a couple, if you will, buckets that I was thinking about in my pursuit of what's next. The one is, you know, for the most part, the role in which that was very similar to mine, which is the Chief Medical Officer type role. But another bucket, and there was a couple of those, by the way, buckets, that is, but another bucket was just what you're speaking of. And I really labeled this as the healthcare industry bucket. And it was the bucket that was, you know, really outside of health systems themselves. It was looking at, you know, what it is that is coming from, you know, the even the titles that come out of a lot of these articles of, you know, certain drugstores and different pharmacies and different consulting groups that are merging together to form, you know, Corporation A to be able to improve and disrupt healthcare. So that's been an interesting journey in learning what's out there. It's not as easy to penetrate as I thought it might be, but that's not to suggest that it's impossible. And some of it is I think it's going to evolve where these organizations are going to want more and more physicians and specifically experienced physician leaders to be able to either be part of their leadership team or even possibly lead what that company is needing to do in its strategy and execute on certain priorities. So I think it's going to be really interesting to see when we talk about disruption, where these non-traditional healthcare access points really start to involve individuals that are from healthcare or have a different purpose in what they want to apply from their skill set and their experience.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's an interesting time. And one of the people that I met several years ago, whom I think you know as well, Mike Fried, once told me that he studies how industries transform, he's been amazed by the lack of examples that he could find of industries auto-disrupting themselves. His observation was that most of the major disruptions come from external forces. And it'll be interesting to see if that holds true as healthcare changes to meet the needs of an aging population, meet the needs of a large global community, to try to deal with socioeconomic factors that have historically been outside of the purview of healthcare. It is going to be a fascinating decade, I think, ahead of us.
Yes, I agree with you.
So in closing here, I just wonder if you could answer two more questions for me. Number one, as you're talking to young physicians, or if you were to be mentoring young physicians who seem to be interested in non-clinical roles, what do you think the best or the most, the traits that they should have that would be most likely to make them successful in transitioning to non-clinicals? And then in a follow-up to that, what specific skill sets would they find most useful as they made the transition?
Yeah, I mentioned a few of those earlier, and I think humility and understanding yourself with regards to emotional intelligence is really critical. I don't think emotional intelligence is going to help you solve the world's problems, but what it's going to allow you to do is to understand yourself in a way that allows you to adapt to others or different situations. As far as the skill sets that you need to be able to gain, they're going to come from areas that can be in a formal structure, like I'm doing currently in the master's program. But, you know, as you really somewhat alluded to, my years of experience somehow has allowed me to be able to continue to grow and move up, if you will, that leadership ladder. And I think that's where it's a matter of being able to appreciate the fact that you can learn from anyone and everyone. You learn, you know, what are the good things and what are the not so good things that you can hopefully assess and put in your mind's eye, if you will, so that you can continue to refine what's working for you, what's not working for you, and most importantly, allow yourself, when you are a formal leader, when you look over your shoulder, you need to make sure that the followers are still there. Very wise mentor and now friend said to me one time that if you look over your shoulder and you don't see the followers behind you, it's either because you got too far out in front of them or they simply just scattered. And I think that is very wise and simplistic, but at the same time, it's a good visual that I've kept, you know, for myself to appreciate that, you know, whatever I'm doing to improve myself, I have to make sure that it's improving my team. And that has been something that's allowed me to take that advice and make sure that whatever I'm learning today is something that I can either apply or kind of keep it in my back pocket in case I need it for a later time. But as you started the question, I do think that it's really important that, you know, if you don't have a mentor, to get one. If you have one, there's nothing wrong with getting another one. Another opportunities are, you know, taking leadership courses or even getting a executive coach. If your organization will support it or you have the means to be able to cover the cost of one, I think it's, you know, really helpful to have an executive coach. And I've had mentors, executive coach, times two actually, and I've been able to take the time to speak to others and just networking and learning what they are doing or not doing in their own roles, but also how are they gaining some of the knowledge they need. And I think if you continue to do that and you have that learning attitude, you're going to continue to be successful. And over a short amount of time, you'll realize how much growth you've already obtained.
Thanks, Doug. I really appreciate that. And I totally agree with your final words there. The coaching and the mentoring are so much more valuable, in my opinion, than necessarily structured programs, because you can bounce ideas off one another. And as you were just answering that question and reflecting on that, I went back to what you said at the very beginning of the interview, where you would sit around with five or six hospitalist colleagues and have conversations and discussions. That is probably a good example of a mentoring session. And many of the people there might not have even categorized it as a mentoring session at that point in their careers, but that's probably exactly the value that you were getting out of those types of very, very casual informal discussions, but picking people's brains about how to practice medicine or how to deal with difficult families. I can't imagine the breadth of the conversations that you would have had sitting around in that type of an environment.
Well, I think you touched on a few of them that absolutely did occur, and I agree with you. They were mentoring sessions without it being in a formal structured program, you know, but nonetheless, they were mentoring sessions. They were colleagues helping each other and really asking some questions to allow ourselves to think differently and to, you know, foster potential solutions of how to be better and not just as a group and to do your job, but be better for yourself.
Yeah, I agree. Well, thank you very much, Doug. I really appreciated you coming on the show and being as willing to talk about these issues as you have been, especially what your future looks like. And I think your perspective on the types of roles that you've had and the type of roles that you're looking for was very valuable. So thanks very much. And I wish you all the best in your search for your next role. I'm sure that you'll be a great asset to whatever organization you join, whatever responsibilities you decide to take on.
Well, thank you, Norm. I appreciate the opportunity to talk with you today.
That concludes episode 4 of Beyond the Bedside. Doug did a great job of describing the value he's finding from the current master's program in which he is enrolled. Remember that at my website, beyondthebedside.net, I've compiled a list of many highly rated master's programs, some of which are designed specifically for practicing physicians. If you have decided that you'd like to explore these opportunities, you'll find some great information on the website. You can also contact me if you have any questions or comments. I would be happy if you left me that information on the website. There is a contact page. I'd be happy to reach out to you and help you transition from a clinical career to a full or part-time non-clinical career. Thanks very much for listening, and I hope you enjoyed the program.